This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and Rod Blagojevich gets his sentence commuted. Returning home last night.
What?
You know, I would love to see a Venn diagram of the wearers of free OJ t-shirts and the wearers of free Rod t-shirts. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. Are you going to the welcome party, welcome home party with Amy?
Yeah, at 11 a.m. Who's in? No, this is a joyous moment. President Trump pardoning him. He got out. He was with Chuck Gowdy in the airport last night. Chuck Gowdy actually got the seat next to him by chance, 7B, 7A. And he explained what life has been like. Okay, let's turn that next jet on. All right. Well, it's only the biggest story in 8 years.
It's the biggest story in how long?
Well, I've been waiting 8 years for this. I don't know if you have, but it's been a big deal. And he took the flight home at 8:30 last night out of O'Hare and said this to Chuck Gowdy while he was walking through the airport.
How did you hear about this today?
On the news.
You heard on the news?
Yeah. Other inmates came and told me they saw it being reported on the news. And President Trump was at Andrews Air Force Base, and he made some comments.
Did you have an inkling that it was coming today?
I did not.
Did you think that it wasn't going to be coming based on what's happened the last year?
I put my faith in God, and I trusted God, and eventually His will be done.
Do you come out a more God-fearing man than you
are? I always believe in God. I always believe in prayer. I will say I'm closer to God because I've had time to be alone with Him for almost 8 years, and it's been a blessing.
What has God told you to do with your life?
To do good and to turn evil into good and to fight for what's right. And I intend to do that.
How will you do that?
I'm going to fight against corrupt criminal justice. I'm going to fight against the corrupt criminal justice system that all too often persecutes and prosecutes people who did nothing wrong, who over-sentence people, who show no mercy, and who are in positions that have no accountability. And they can do it and say whatever they want. They can put you into prison for things that aren't crimes, for routine politics.
Are you
I follow
you
the law every step of the way. I've said that all along, and that's absolutely the case. And they're the ones who did wrong. And eventually, I think the truth will win out.
And the
Bible teaches that.
Are you going to seek justice from a public position of some sort?
I'm going to seek justice. I'm going to fight for justice. I'm going to do what I believe is right for our country.
312-642-5600 is our turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36, type in DA. Then a quick comment. He wasn't pardoned. His sentence was commuted, so he's still on supervision for the next 2 years. Has to pay a $20,000 fine. But I think justice was served, and I think President Trump has huevos the size of Texas because this is the best thing, Dan. Everyone was so happy that he got released, my liberal friends, but they couldn't bring themselves to say President Trump did the right thing. What I heard yesterday was, I'm so glad he's out. This is great. But now he gets to take credit for it. And I said, well, who's he? The President Trump. I said, well, of course he takes credit for it because he's the one who had the you-know-what to do it. Because Republican members last year were telling him, don't do it, don't do it. And he did it anyway.
So I'm sorry, was he over-sentenced or did he do nothing wrong? I mean, at least we didn't have to suffer through the phony baloney non-apology from Blagojevich because,
there's no contrition.
Never did anything wrong. There is no contrition. So,
he messed up big time and he paid the price, but he was over sentenced. That's what 14 years is way too long. So I'm glad that his 14 year sentence was commuted. He spent 8 years in prison, which I still think was too long. If you look at Jesse Jackson Jr., who had the $8 million ready to pay him for Barack Obama's U.S. Senate seat, he got 2 years, if even that.
Well, you're conflating cases. Jesse Jackson was not sent to prison for anything related to the quote-unquote sale of the Senate seat. He was sent to prison on campaign finance-related charges, not public corruption-related charges. Frank in Arlington Heights, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yes, good morning, Dan. Amy, I'm totally with you on this one. Matt Dlugovich was a political prisoner in a sense.
he stole Sinensen.
He did. He did some wrong things, but you know what? Come on. I mean, more than George Ryan.
Come on. Wait, how is no, actually
14
thank you,
years?
Thank you for
no
bring,
way.
Thank you for I mean, thank you for bringing up George Ryan. Come on, he did something wrong. Yeah, I know. So he was guilty.
He was set up. He was set up, railroaded, and you know what? It just shows how horrible our justice system can be sometimes when it has a political enemy that it doesn't like.
So I'm sorry. Did he do anything wrong, or was he completely innocent?
No, he was not completely innocent, and he deserves a sentence. But 14 years? I mean, when I heard that when he got it back, you know, 8-9 years ago, whenever it was that he got sentenced, I was like, this is appalling. 14 years for this.
Rapists don't even
When
get
George
that.
Ryan only got 6-7, I mean, for what happened with him, where you had that family get killed, I think, with the license plate.
Yeah, the
you know,
CDL scandal.
As a result
scandal.
Of it. So, yes. You know, I mean, it was just, I don't know.
Right.
I just felt he was a political prisoner this whole time. So
well, thanks for the covering. Although you just said that he wasn't a political prisoner because he should have gone to prison. Now we're arguing about the length of sentence. And what does it say about our bastardized understanding of justice in this kleptocracy of a state that we get so worked up arguing about 7 years versus 10 years versus 14 years. Since you brought up George Ryan and Judge Zagel did at sentencing, you would think that somebody would have learned a lesson from the previous occupant of the governor's mansion going to prison. So was sentencing him within the guidelines, but perhaps more giving him more time than he otherwise would have got had George Ryan not gone to jail right before him? Was that a message sender to the political class in this state? Yes, it was.
Well, it was supposed to be.
And so do you want to send a message to the political class or no? I mean, it's not changed anything. Obviously, we've got this wide-ranging federal investigation going on right now, and more legislators pleading guilty, and aldermen will be pleading guilty.
Mm-hmm. And eventually, hopefully, the trail will lead to Mike Madigan's office.
Why? So he can be over-sentenced, and then we can argue about whether Madigan should if he was ever charged and convicted of crime. Is it okay to give him 5 years, or should we be arguing? That was really more of a 3-year federal corruption crime spree.
Well, here's President Trump and why he did it, and I love the fact that he still can't pronounce his name right.
Yes, we have commuted the sentence of Rod Blagojevich. He served 8 years in jail. A long time, and I watched his wife on television. I don't know him very well. I've met him a couple of times. He was on for a short while in The Apprentice years ago. Seemed like a very nice person. Don't know him, but he served 8 years in jail. It's a long time to go. Many people disagree with the sentence. He's a Democrat. He's not a Republican. It was a prosecution by the same.
Okay.
No, he's not. He's not a Democrat. He's not a Republican.
He's got obviously a big fan in me. And if you're asking me what my party affiliation is, I'm a Trumpocrat.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a new party. Trumpocrat.
Party for one. Ziff.
Your table's ready.
Ziff in Hyde Park.
I don't know if it's a party for one, Dan, because I think Amy and I are going to join with Rod.
Mm-hmm.
Amy and Dan, I just got in at 3:00. I was over there at the house with Patty and Rod. You know what? Rod has a photographic memory. I walked out of his house once to walk him to the car with his daughter, and he said, "Are you going to be around this evening?" That's the day when he wrapped it up for 8 years. And the first word he said to me yesterday when he walked into the house, he said, "Are you going to be there tomorrow?" Amy and Dan, I've done 8 years with this guy. Amy, I'm going to have a letter there for you today that Rod's going to sign, and you are now the president of Rod Blagojevich fan club.
Yeah.
I'm resigning.
Oh, why are you resigning?
I did 8 years to get him out of jail. Now you got to do 8 years to keep him. I did 8 years to get him out. Now you got to do 8 to keep him out.
Now, Ziff,
Dan with you and introduce me to him, and please. I'm going to have a certain tie today.
Oh,
so okay. You guys look me. I'll be right in. Did you like my sign, Amy?
Did you see my sign, Amy? That was, yep. Very sweet. He put it up on the banister there.
Now, Ziff, did you
and
get
I need
did,
both of you guys Ziff, to sign Ziff, it. Ziff, go ahead, Ziff. Dan.
Did Rod give you a free pap smear for your support?
Bro.
Because I know that was
a
big thing.
I got free kindergarten, free preschool, excuse me.
Rod's a tough man, and I'm going to tell him what you said.
Please do. Thanks for the call. I mean, that's what he was talking about right up until the end, right, until he was taken into federal custody, about giving free pap, you know, free meaning taxpayer finance, pap smears to women, among his many accomplishments, like free rides for seniors, like, I don't know, big ideas like Keno for kids.
Keno wasn't a big thing back then, but it is now.
It wasn't a big thing back then?
The Keno?
Yeah, it was. It's been a big thing in casinos in Vegas for, like, you know.
Oh, I'm sorry. Something else completely.
Keno, you know, gambling?
Now I know.
Okay. Tom.
I don't gamble, clearly.
Tom in Blue Island.
Dan and Amy, good morning. Dan, what do you say? Yeah, I gave your effing grandmother a ride on a bus.
Yeah, how about that?
obviously, a big Trump supporter here. This is bad Trump, as Tom in Deer Park likes to call him. I believe Danny pardoned him just to elevate the circumstance of Pat Fitzgerald and Comey, who were part of the prosecution.
You're darn right,
Rod
he did.
Blagojevich. Rod Blagojevich is number two in blowhard status to Trump, but I like Trump because he's a blowhard. Rod Blagojevich is an idiot. I hope he could. I don't know. I didn't see if he's got gray hair, but I'm sure it'll be black again, and he'll be back in his Elvis suits and everything.
Yeah, black parties.
This is a bad day. He's a scumbag.
Well, President
Another
Trump.
Democrat scumbag.
No, he helped those charged with corruption just, you know, as recently like he was. He survived his impeachment trial. Then he helped those that he felt were wrongly accused or over-sentenced, pardoning seven people and commuting the sentence of four. So there was other people, and we'll get to those later, that he
much more interesting
pardoned.
Is Michael Milken, inappropriate, but Elliot in Greenville, South Carolina.
Hey, you would not believe this just secured my vote for Trump in 2020, and I made a reaction on my YouTube channel, Elliot Corbin, yesterday. It's about 10 minutes long, breaking down what I thought about the case and how I will admit Rod is like a hero to me.
Why is that? Especially down there in South Carolina in Trey Gowdy land.
Well, you see, it's kind of funny because I was stressed about going to college. And then right before he was resentenced, I read an article about what he was doing in prison. I was like, I can make it through college. If this guy can survive being wrongfully accused and spending 5 years, which was at the time, now 8 in prison, I figure if he can do this, then I can just be a great motivational speaker on the autism spectrum. It's like adversity and adversity, you can relate.
All right, thanks for the call. You could do a 4-year stint in college if you can do an 8 years in Littleton. Yeah, speaking of higher education, I thought at minimum Trump should have had him finish out the semester at that Littleton federal lockup, because he's got all those Shakespeare students, and I understand they were just getting to the sonnets. So I'd hate to see all the
from what I heard, the fellow prisoners were sad to see him go.
Right, your pipeline to the penal system, Lewis on the South Side.
You ever been to jail? You ever seen a good man naked?
No.
Go to prison and visit friends in prison, and you leave with the most saddest, broken down feeling in the world.
Yeah, I saw Shawshank. Lewis on the South Side.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. I think Trump is disgusted with the justice system, and this is his warning. You know, this is a prelude to things to come, because what he's going to do in the near future is that he's going to pardon Stone and Flynn and the rest of them, and he's showing them that there's nothing you can do because I have that authority to do that.
Thanks for the call. Well,
yeah, I mean, tomorrow Roger Stone gets sentenced, so this may be a prelude to that.
Certainly the timing of it is curious. Normally these sorts of actions are taken after an election or as you're about to leave office. So the timing of this is very interesting. And is it message sending? I'm sure it is in part. There are several messages that I think are being sent, and I think you've covered them. The retribution against Mueller through Fitzgerald, effectively, as well as what's going on with some of these prosecutions and pending sentence hearings, too.
You know, my hands are shaky, my knees are weak, I can't seem to stand on my own 2 feet.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer.
On AM 560, The Answer. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity, this afternoon at 2 on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, still talking about Trump's clemency actions yesterday. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. Obviously, the headliner for Illinois is Rod Blagojevich.
And he thanked President Trump real quickly.
I want to express my most profound and everlasting gratitude to President Trump. He didn't have to do this. He's a Republican president. I was a Democratic governor. My fellow Democrats have not been very kind to him. They've been very unkind to him. And what he did was, I think, something that deserves a great amount of appreciation on my part personally. And he has, from me, my deepest, most profound and everlasting gratitude.
And we're going to be speaking with his brother, Rob Blagojevich, at the 7 o'clock hour.
Yeah, Rob is a whole separate case from Rod. We've talked to him before. But what's Rod going to do now? I mean, other than I assume get his gig at WLS back.
Do you think return
to talk radio airwaves? I mean, certainly.
Write a book. I'm sure he's been penning something in prison because he has nothing better to do besides working out.
Sure.
He said he was concerned when he heard that he was going to be released from prison, Dan. He was concerned whether or not he should get his run in because he has a routine and he didn't want to break his routine. 312-642-5600 is our turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36, type in DA, then a quick comment. Well, he said he's going to devote his life to criminal justice reform. So maybe he could.
Yeah, okay.
Well,
and so what form is that going to take?
Can he run for office again?
I hope so.
Will he become a Republican?
He can go back to Trump and get a full pardon so he can run for governor again. Certainly we want a sequel to that page turner of a book he penned previously. That was scintillating stuff.
Easy beach read, yeah.
Well, yeah. He both thinks and writes at about a second grade level, which I know we here love it. So, yeah, Rod Blagojevich certainly in our hearts, and now we hopefully be back in our state and find a way to continue the public service that he so heroically offered during his 6 years as governor before, you know, being removed from office.
So I have the sense you feel that President Trump maybe shouldn't have commuted his sentence.
Is this draining the swamp? Is it? Is it draining the swamp? Is this consistent with rooting out corruption?
Has President Trump abused his pardon powers?
It's not abusing his pardon powers. The president has absolute power, really, in this area. So it's not an abuse. It's a question of judgment. Was this the right judgment call? That both the timing as well as the individuals who were the beneficiaries, starting with Blagojevich.
312-642-5600 is our turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36, type in DA, then a quick quit.
Now, contrast Blagojevich to Michael Milken. And he's going to be a less, well, I don't know. I wouldn't think Blagojevich would be a sympathetic figure. But then again, I still have problems fully comprehending the Stockholm syndrome that afflicts people in Illinois. I'm still grappling with that. Michael Milken, however, there's a strong case for Michael Milken. There's been a strong case for some time. There's ample evidence that actually was provided in courts of law that Michael Milken was the victim of a malicious prosecution, a political prosecution. For example, he was originally, when he pled out to insider trading, given a 10-year sentence that was later reduced by a judge to 2 years. Uh-huh. Most of the original securities prosecutions of the era in which Michael Milken was prosecuted were overturned by the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. the White House saying in the statement explaining President's decision to pardon Milken, the charges filed against Michael Milken were truly novel. In fact, one of the lead prosecutors later admitted that Mr. Milken had been charged with numerous technical offenses and regulatory violations that had never before been charged as crimes. That's true. And you know who the prosecutor was in the Michael Milken case?
Who?
Rudy Giuliani. And Rudy Giuliani
really
was one of those who argued for President Trump to pardon Michael Milken. He knows
so he knew
what they did what in the U.S. Attorney's office in the Southern District.
Oh, I just got the chills.
He knew that it. He knows. He knew it was wrong. And you know, you don't have to cry for me, Argentina, over billionaire Michael Milken. But if you're interested in the rule of law, you want to talk about real witch hunts. You want to talk about prosecutorial abuse because they didn't understand the innovation that Michael Milken brought to Wall Street, the high-yield corporate bonds. High-yield corporate bonds that were important startup capital for companies you may have heard of, like Barnes & Noble, MCI,
oh, really?
CNN.
They kept calling him the junk bond king.
Well, that's what it was called, right? Junk bonds by detractors. And this was an anti-Wall Street, a populist era. You know, think about the sort of Occupy Wall Street 1.0 and the sorts of ambitious, I would say, craven prosecutors trying to make a name for themselves. And you take down some rich guy on Wall Street because who cares, right? I need scalps on my wall if I want to advance my career, either legally or politically. Harvey Silverglate, in his excellent bestseller, Three Felonies a Day, mm-hmm. criminal defense attorney, he had a chapter in his book about the Michael Milken prosecution. Following or harassing the money. The techniques used to force Milken to plead guilty to non-crimes were so raw and dangerous that it became obvious to me shortly after I joined his defense team following his unexpectedly harsh sentencing that the same techniques would soon be applied to a much wider sphere of civil society which cannot afford to fight. The pain unjustly suffered by Milken and his family was real and palpable, and it became clear that if they can do this to him, they can and will do this to anyone. Milken's biggest problem, writes Silverglate, was that some of his most ingenious but entirely lawful maneuvers were reviewed by those who initially didn't understand them. And they were viewed as felonious precisely because they were novel and often extremely profitable. And what did prosecutors do to get Milken to fold? They went after his brother. They went after his 92-year-old grandfather.
So they made his life hell, yeah.
And they were going to issue a superseding indictment that would have subjected him to even more jail time than he was already looking at. And, you know, the feds have about a 99% conviction rate, so he took the hit. But the truth of it is there were crooks on Wall Street at the time, and there are always crooks on Wall Street. There are crooks in a lot of sectors. There's a lot of crooks in public office that we
really
don't seem to have as much concern about. There's the crooks in police departments. There's crooks in all walks of life.
Chicago and, public schools, there's crooks.
Absolutely. And teachers, absolutely. All the noble professions, there are some bad people in those noble professions too. The job of a free society and a justice system with integrity is to distinguish the good people from the bad people, the people behaving and the people misbehaving within particular sectors, not to essentially categorize an entire sector as full of outlaws. Ivan Boesky was a crook. Michael Milken was not.
And here's President Trump talking about Milken and Bernard Kerik.
We have Bernie Kerik. We have Mike Milken, who's gone around and done an incredible job for the world with all of his research on cancer. And he's done this, and he suffered greatly. He paid a big price, paid a very tough price, but he's done an incredible job. And, yeah, these are all people that you have to see the recommendations. I rely on recommendations very much.
Bert in Lake Zurich, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, guys. Always great to talk to you. Hey, I would argue that Rod Blagojevich might be the most dangerous man in the world for Illinois Democrats right now. He's A, somebody that knows where all the bodies are buried. B, someone that has to feel that he was hung out to dry by his fellow Democratic co-conspirators. And three, someone who seems like he has some loyalty to Trump right now. I would be curious to see your thoughts. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Bert.
I think the Democratic Party has ostracized him out a long time ago. I'm not worried about him. I mean, if I was part of the Democratic insider party, I wouldn't be worried about him spilling any beans.
Yeah, those 3 points that Bert made all turn out to be untrue. I hate to break it to you. We've been through this before. Rob Blagojevich's book, which I referenced, that was going to be the tell-all that provided the roadmaps for where all those alleged bodies were buried. What did it provide? Donut.
Wonder if Dick Mell's going to be there today.
So, so the idea that he's a dangerous man, Rob Blagojevich has always mainly been a dangerous man to himself. There are no bodies buried that we don't know. There's no new information that's coming from Blagojevich. Just like he couldn't produce any new information before he went off to prison or to try to save himself before he was convicted. So this is one of these arguments that people who want to be sympathetic to the cause or employ hope as a strategy to reorder the political power structure in this state believe, but it just turns out not to be true. It's not true. And there's no evidence to support it. And what, I'm sorry, what was the legacy of Rod Blagojevich in terms of
free preschool?
On balance, was Rod Blagojevich's 6 years as governor and his tenure in Congress before that a net plus for Illinois?
No.
So why all the fanfare?
I'm happy for his children, for his wife.
Yeah. Joe in Burlington, Wisconsin.
Yeah, good morning. You know, I remember when the great white knight, Peter Fitzgerald, that above reproach, middle of the road political figure, couldn't wait to get to the podium. And we have to stop this auctioning of a United States Senate seat from Illinois. The time they were getting all kinds of good information from wiretaps or whatever you want to call them now. They even had Rahm Emanuel on the line, you know, and this was, I think, at a time when the great Obama was elected, but not sworn in. And the last thing they wanted was for the Bamster himself to get on the phone and say, hey, Rod, what do we have to get one of my people in on that Senate seat? And they couldn't have that. So if they were really interested in justice, they would have continued that. What investigation stops when they're getting all kinds of information like that? They don't stop it. They continue on and get more information. And boy, we couldn't have that. Maybe we wouldn't have had all the corruption of our institutions like the IRS and the Justice Department if this guy would have been found out that he was just another dirty Illinois politician, just like Blagojevich. And maybe we would have kept our country a little bit better off.
Thanks for the call, Joe. Yeah, I mean, there's no question that there's never been a satisfactory explanation to why you don't get seller and buyer
right
with respect to the Senate seat.
And one person that wanted that U.S. Senate seat, our current governor, J.B. Pritzker, who yesterday came out blasting Trump, President Trump has abused his pardon power, blah, 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 to reward his friends and condone corruption.
I have another donut there, Jelly Belly. Yeah. People
forget that. Remember that conversation that they had that we can play for you when J.B. Pritzker was
looking for a seat,
was going to, wanted to be the fifth congressional congressman or from the congressman from the fifth district, then gave that, said, no, Rod, you can have that.
Attorney General. The Rod Blagojevich's greatest accomplishment, preventing Valerie Jarrett from being a United States Senator.
Obama wanted her.
Making a mockery of Illinois, which is appropriate, by appointing Roland Burris to that Senate seat.
Oh, Rolly the Pooh. Aw.
Yeah, but
remember when he came on, he gave us his home phone number to try and sell his books?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Nice guy.
I appreciate.
Seat filler for a few years.
I mean, I appreciate Blago's confusion. Voters look at these public offices as the property of the politicians. So why wouldn't the politicians? I mean, I appreciate that. I get why he would be confused about that. Ryan in Marengo.
How you doing?
Good.
Deplorable here. I got to get to work soon, so I'll make it short.
Okay.
But, all right. Don't let us keep you.
Hey, I'd like to see Trump give him a job, Rob Blagojevich. I think that would be it would stick it to the establishment more than he's doing already.
What job?
You know what? It really doesn't matter. Just give him something. Just if anything, to irritate the Democrats even more.
Thanks for the call, Ryan.
Bring him to the White House. Yeah. Maybe he can work on justice reform. Uh-huh. I think he should team up with Kathleen Zellner, and they can, you know, start a whole program of people wrongly accused. And
yeah, your personal attorney and Rod Blagojevich. That sounds about right. I mean, what would be commensurate with Rod's skill set? Boy, that's a real conundrum.
I have a feeling he's going to run for office again.
Oh, I hope so. Larry and Carol Stream.
Oh, good morning, Amy and Dan. Dan, I can't believe you forgot what Rob's legacy is. Right after he got elected, he got caught in a traffic jam because some idiot was going about 30 miles an hour under the speed limit on 55. So we now have, although it's never enforced, the don't go slow in the left lane.
Well, that is true.
Yeah, which you are a big
call,
advocate
Larry.
Of.
Why? Yeah, boy, that's causing me to rethink my entire position on Blagojevich. That's how important that is. All right.
I knew we'd find something that you liked about Rod.
Ken in Lombard.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. I'm always amused by these people, the pseudo concerned people, like our own trust fund baby Huey, who sits in the governor's mansion right now. I wonder if all those toilets are connected up. I'm not sure. But my point on this is, Dan, you made a comment about doing commutations or pardons before an election, that this seems suspicious. If you take a timeline of Barack Obama and all the things that he did with respect to this, he did plenty of them in 2011 before an election. And I'm not saying that that's right or wrong. It's a matter of judgment. It's his call.
Yeah.
But the one thing that's going on here is this guy is not pardoning career drug dealers, career drug runners, and domestic terrorists that blow up over 100 different targets to include killing people. This is not what's – so the bar has been set pretty low, not to mention Trump's predecessor, Barack Obama. He commuted – He pardoned people to the tune of like at least a rate of a dozen times more people than his predecessors did combined. A dozen of the presidential predecessors. So when the bar is this low, I'm amused that these Democrats that are trying to turn this against Trump. What Trump needs to do, and I'm sure he'll do it, he'll reference his predecessor and say, "Hey, look, you didn't have a problem with this. I'm tired of selective justice," and then we choose and pick who we like and don't like with this broad range of sentencing.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Ken. Yeah. Roosevelt at Midway.
Hey, how you guys doing this morning? Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm wondering what kind of a deal was cut between Patty or the Blagojeviches in return for what the president did to get him out of jail, because we know that the president always has to get something. He doesn't just do anything.
No,
out of
that's not
of
true.
Heart.
Patty,
well,
Patty,
can I finish?
Patty
can
is,
I finish?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, Roosevelt finished.
Well,
yes.
But I'm going to answer your question. I think Patty is going to be his listing agent when he sells Mar-a-Lago, and she's going to have to cut her commission.
Okay. So here's the deal. So this sets up the table for a pardoning of Flynn,
right, exactly.
Manafort, Stone, and everybody else that is in jail currently under the administration.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Job.
I mean, the timing of this is because tomorrow Roger Stone is going to be sentenced. That's why I think he chose to do it when he did.
And Dan?
Yeah.
If our governor has to have a donut, don't you think that William Barr should, side by side?
I don't know. Thanks for the call, Roosevelt. I don't know. That's such a metaphysical question. I don't know. If you're going to attack William Barr for being fat, then you have to come up with your own joke.
Yeah.
You can't just piggyback on mine, Roosevelt. That's how it works. Ed in Oak Brook.
Yeah, you know what? Well, you guys were talking about Milken and even Blagojevich and all that they went through. This is exactly what I wanted to happen to that Andy McCabe, I think that's his name, mm-hmm. the one that they just said we're not going to charge him with anything. He probably would never have been convicted, but you know what? Let him go through the hell that he puts through so many other people for nonsense type stuff. And then that's what I just wanted to get across. When these prosecutors, these federal government guys got all the money and the resources in the world, and I'm for a plan that says, okay, if you're charged by the federal guys and you go to court and the court and federal guys lose, you know what? They should pay for all your expenses because no one has the money to go up against those guys. Very few people do. So have a nice day.
Thanks for the call, Ed. I get it. I just like standards being set. Like, what's the standard analysis to make these decisions? To make the decision on Blagojevich and the 10 other people that received palliative justice from the president. I get the Michael Milken, explain that. Mm-hmm. But I
get Bernard Carrick.
Yeah, I get that. I like principles to be laid out. This is what's informing my decision making, as opposed to sort of this whimsical approach to public policy making, even where the president has effectively absolute authority. I mean, and again, yes, I agree with the people talking about the left's hypocrisy here, from Bill Clinton effectively wheeling and dealing pardons on his way out of the office to Obama pardoning terrorists.
Right.
I get it.
From the FAL on.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So Caesar Mike and Bolshevik Bernie square off for the first time on a debate stage in Vegas tonight. And we're going to find out how Bloomberg fares in that sort of setting. We're also going to find out, per his performance, whether it's just a TV audience that Bloomberg has, or does he have a real constituency the way that Bernie has. This piece by Sean Davis, the Federalist, is really good. I immediately thought of Paul Harvey's
Oh, you did?
And God Made a Farmer when I heard Bloomberg's comments about farmers last week.
So insensitive. But you know what shows what he truly thinks of farmers, the people who feed the world. Okay.
But Sean Davis really consummated the opportunity in a way I didn't.
Okay, what did
I
he
regret
say?
To say. His piece at thefederalist.com, So God Made a Bloomberg.
That's the title?
And on the eighth day, God looked down on his planned paradise and said, I need a tiny soulless technocrat to tell everyone else how to live their lives. So God made a Bloomberg. God said, I need a know-it-all Wall Street banker who made more money by getting fired than most men will make their entire lives working an honest job.
So God made a Bloomberg.
I need somebody with strong hands, with hands strong enough to carry a stool and a booster seat wherever he goes, but gentle enough to sign the voter registration papers as a Democrat, and then a Republican, and then an Independent, and then a Democrat again.
And God made a Bloomberg.
God said, I need somebody willing to randomly accost black men for no good reason other than having the wrong color skin. I need somebody who will say that the best way to reduce crime is to target black kids and, quote, throw them up against the walls and frisk them, unquote, for the crime of being black. Someone who will brag that one side effect of putting all the cops in the minority neighborhoods is that you end up arresting kids for marijuana that are all minorities.
And God made a Bloomberg.
God had to have somebody willing to forcibly remove black guns from black hands because they just don't have any long-term focus or anything, quote, unquote. Somebody who thought the best way to reduce crime was to take the description of, quote, male minority 16 to 25, unquote, and, quote, Xerox it and pass it out to all the cops, unquote.
And God made a Bloomberg.
God said, I need somebody with no charm, no charisma, no compelling reason to ever serve in government and nonetheless buy his way onto the ballot, then buy his way into the mayor's office, then buy off the city council to eliminate the two-term limit on mayoral service. And then I need him to spend nine figures buying his way into the Democratic primary because there would be nothing more hilarious than watching a broken-down old socialist get robbed again by yet another New York crony who is the life-size poster child for everything that's wrong with modern capitalism.
And God made a Bloomberg.
That about sums it.
Is he going to stand up on a box tonight, you think? I mean, seriously, they might not be able to see him over the lectern if he doesn't.
I think he should Mary Poppins it. Just stay elevated above the stage the entire time.
Wire him up.
Yeah, Michael Bloomberg versus Bernie tonight. Here's a question
that's
I would ask.
Great.
Here's a question I would ask both of them. Since you're both supporters of government takeover of health care, what would your position on this be? Across the pond there, where they've perfected government-run health care in Britain. Nice.
That's why when people are sick, they come to America for treatment.
Right.
Okay.
Nice or the NHS, but I prefer the more Orwellian acronym of NICE. That's their state-run health care. Sexist and racist patients could be barred from non-emergency care at NHS hospitals under new rules to be enforced starting in April. Currently, staff can refuse to treat non-critical patients who are verbally aggressive or physically violent toward them, but these protections will now extend to any harassment, bullying, or discrimination, including homophobic, sexist, or racist remarks. I mean, how would Bloomberg fare in that sort of environment? He'd never get treated, although, he could purchase treatment outside the government provisions. But, think about the implications of that, right? You say something that a healthcare worker deems sexist, for example, and so they can refuse treatment, and this is a government-run system. Who on stage supports that and let everybody raise their hand? Right? Because eliminating free thought, eliminating free speech and pursuing thought crimes is how you build a free society, right? Anne in Chicago, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
And I was questioning, are these the end times? And Bloomberg is the Antichrist that's predicted in the Bible?
No, they're not. Thanks for asking. These are not end times, and Bloomberg is not the Antichrist.
Last night, CNN had a town hall with Bernie Sanders, Amy Klobuchar, and Pete. And Bernie was asked, if you're the Democratic nominee for president, will you accept money from Michael Bloomberg?
I bet he said no.
Did you hear what he said?
I said that obviously we were going to do everything we can to win. But if I did not
Donald
win the nomination,
Trump
I would be
support
defeated.
Vigorously
so, the candidate who won.
That, Anna was specifically
because Donald
me.
Trump must be defeated.
So let me just follow up on that, because Anna was specifically asking, would you accept, if Michael Bloomberg doesn't get it, you get the nomination, would you accept if he says, look, I got $500 million left over that I'm going to give to you, would you accept that?
Well, what I did say is that if Mr. Bloomberg wins, and I certainly hope he does not, I will support the Democratic nominee. As of now, we don't have a super PAC. We're not asking for a super PAC. That is my position right now.
So you're not sure if you would take the money or not?
And then he...
Okay. I'll leave,
threw
I'll
his hands
there.
And he seems so angry. I mean, tonight's going to be a battle.
Yeah. A good piece in Wall Street Journal about Bernie's millions versus Bloomberg's billions. And the millions beat the billions. Because, of course, the millions of small-dollar contributors that Bernie Sanders has represent an actual constituency, like I said. Bloomberg is, a studio television audience, at least at this point. For example, only 32% of Bernie's donations come from large contributors. Compare that to 64% for Biden and 55% for Pete Buttigieg. So there is something to that. You make a $20 contribution. It's not just the 20 bucks. It's obviously what? Your commitment.
Right.
And your engagement. And you're going to tell
your
friends.
Allegiance.
And that builds an audience. And that builds votes. And ultimately, this comes down into translating money into votes.
And Bernie supporters are aggressive. I mean, I see Bernie Sanders signs everywhere. People have stickers. They wear them to church. They're out and, shopping. And they have Bernie T-shirts on. So there's a real army of supporters for him?
There is. I mean, let's not overstate the case. He still, even though he leads the field, the Wall Street Journal NBC news survey out yesterday, 27%. Now, that's a quarter. But there's some distance between him and the rest of the field. This is national numbers, so they don't matter really, other than to sort of give you a handle on how things are trending. Biden, Warren, Bloomberg, 14%, Buttigieg, 13%, Klobuchar, 7%. So there is some distance between the two. He's leading in Nevada at present. He's extending his lead in California. And if Warren doesn't make it to Super Tuesday, whether she endorses Bernie or not, you would think that Bernie would get more than his fair share of current Warren supporters. Now, it could be there could be some. I mean, that's not going to be 1-to-1. Warren getting out would seem to redound to Bernie's benefit more. He gets as much as anybody else gets, and then it's split among still a handful of candidates. So Nate Silver had a good piece at 538 blog suggesting that, yes, does Bernie have the proverbial high floor and low ceiling? He does. Does that mean he can't win the nomination? No, it does not. Not as long as this field has 4 or 5 viable candidates. And if the field has that many viable candidates, that many candidates participating, that many candidates drawing votes and running actual campaigns, while Bernie is piling up delegates by actually winning primaries and caucuses. So this performance tonight from Bloomberg, we're going to see, and I don't sense that he is going to be great on the debate stage for some of the reasons that Sean Davis's satirical column pointed out and for a host of others. I think he is much more comfortable in those rooms in Oxford than he is on a debate stage being taken to task by people who I'm sure he feels are lesser than him. Mike in Crown Point, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
I think it'd be interesting for experiment if some of the media called up Bernie's contribution line, offered to donate $10, $20 million just to see if they'd get rejected. He's a prototypical hypocrite. He's like the pig in the book Animal Farm.
Yes.
And he's just set up all these things for everybody else to live by, and he'll be living, you know, an elitist lifestyle the rest of his life. Thanks.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Yeah, well, we talked about that with Peter Schweitzer yesterday about how Bernie has leveraged his government post to enrich the family and himself by extension. That's the old kleptocratic game. That's the old commissar's game, isn't it? Bob in Buffalo Grove.
Thanks for taking my call, Dan and Amy. Amy said it great with the battle tonight. I'm just wondering how the other candidates are going to weigh in. Biden, Warren and Klobuchar, just to see what how they're going to comment on Bloomberg and his money.
Well, thanks for the call,
they're
Bob.
Seasons. I mean, he's the newbie on stage tonight. And I don't know, I'm not familiar with his debate skills, if he's going to be effective, if it's just going to be a shouting match or what. That's why it's must-see TV on Wednesday night.
Yeah. I mean, if you've seen, like, Larry David and Jeff Garland get into shouting matches on a Curb Your Enthusiasm, episode, you sort of have a preview of what tonight will be, I expect. Now, Bloomberg's got yet another utterance that has him in trouble with the party to which he currently affiliates. This is Bloomberg just last year in a forum hosted by the Bermuda Business Development Agency a year ago, March of 2019 in Manhattan. He was talking about Democrat candidates and talking about some of the social issues they get involved in discussing and how unhelpful they are. And he had this to say about the trans issue, more on the bathroom issue. Now listen to this and see if the identitarians who dominate the Democrat primary electorate are going to fold in for this.
They didn't listen to us. If you go to the middle of the country, people would say, if your conversation during a presidential election is about some guy wearing a dress and whether he, she, or it can go to and go to the locker room with their daughter, that's not a winning formula for most people. They care about health care, they care about education, they care about safety and all of those kinds of things. And some of these social issues that, and it's not just the American government, the EU government does it as well. We're focusing on a lot of things that have little relevance to people who are trying to live in a world that is changing because of technology and communications and things like that. And so you can understand where somebody like Trump comes from.
Mm-hmm. He, she, or it? He, she, or
he,
it?
He, she, or it? Uh-oh.
I think
wrong answer.
I am sticking with my original prediction. Not enough money in the world to sell Bloomberg's manure-smelling air freshener.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy.
Please, this has got to be a joke, right? The story you're about to tell.
Cory Booker's boo. Rosario Dawson. Remember how Cory Booker was dating actress Rosario Dawson?
With air quotes. Oh, yeah. That was his, you know, they were seen a few times on the red carpet at certain events, and he brought her out on the campaign trail just a few times, not a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Not as enough as I'd like to see for a couple that's truly committed to each other and in love.
Well, in this could be a Why Dan Proft is Single. Booker said of Rosario.
Oh my gosh! What do we need to cue up the love music, Justin? Uh-huh. Please, yes. Let's set the scene, shall we? We met on a spring day in the law library. Yeah. Oh no, this is different.
Look, both of us, you know, we've had relationships, but I'm not sure if I've ever fully given myself over to a relationship as much as I have with her. And allowed myself to be as vulnerable. I mean, gosh, that night we talked for hours and hours. I had trouble asking for her phone number.
Oh.
I think I said something really stupid like, how would I get in touch with you? And she mercilessly said something like, oh, you want my phone number? And my insides were like, hell yeah. And I'll ring you up on my Hello Kitty phone as soon as I get home. I added that.
And the hell yeah.
Dear
Do we have an
diary,
update?
Today I got her number and my insides felt all squishy.
I think she's the one.
I gave her my number. Do you think she'll call? She's swell.
She's pretty.
Uh-huh.
They're a striking couple.
Well, that was, you know, at full blossom, their love at full blossom. Now Rosario Dawson is gay.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
Wait, what do you mean she changed teams?
She has come out as a lesbian just a month after dating Cory Booker. people kept saying that I came out. I didn't do that, she said in a recent interview with Bustle. I mean, it's not inaccurate, but I did never... Come out. I mean, I guess I am now. Ooh, talk about the confusion. I've never had a relationship in that space, so I felt it like I never felt like an authentic calling. I never felt like an authentic calling to me. Okay.
Okay. She sounds like a hot mess.
Yeah.
Well, she did not elaborate on how she identifies her sexuality. She clarified that she's never actually been in a queer relationship.
No.
Well, then how do you know if you're gay if you haven't been in the relationship with a woman?
She has come out as gay.
Okay.
People kept saying that I came out. I didn't do that. I mean, it's not inaccurate, but I never did come out. In other words, it's not inaccurate to call me a lesbian, but I haven't had a lesbian relationship yet, so I don't feel authentic calling myself a lesbian. I mean, if you could follow that logic, which I challenge
you to.
What
about Booker? I mean, is his heart broken?
I believe Meredith Baxter Burney is available if he'd like to try find, maybe Kelly McGillis, if he'd like to try and find a new girlfriend.
Okay.
Maybe.
Maybe he'll come out next. Oh, wait.
What about.
Did I say that?
What about. Patty Mel.
Or Deb Mel?
Deb Mel, I mean.
I think
is she available? Is she looking for a fella like Cory Booker? Is looking for a gal?
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and with commentary about the president's actions granting commutations to the likes of Rob Blagojevich and pardons to the likes of Bernie Kerik and Michael Milken. A lot of talk about this as the setup for what he may do with respect to Roger Stone, depending on the sentence that he receives, as well as
Michael Flynn
and Manafort and others. That's perhaps part of it. I think part of it as well is a reckoning. It's a reckoning with DOJ officials from the past and presidential administration officials from the past. Because the reckoning still hasn't come through the normal channels like the Department of Justice. And that was most recently punctuated when DOJ closed the case on McCabe on Friday. Mark Penn on with Maria Bartiromo, Fox Business yesterday. Mark Penn, former Clintonista, had this to say about that overdue reckoning.
Well, I'm a little puzzled that Andrew McCabe wasn't prosecuted because he was on tape in the second interview lying, and it did receive the strong condemnation of the inspector general. But it does look like Barr is conducting a thorough investigation here. Look, on Roger Stone, I wrote two articles over a year ago saying that this was an incredibly unfair prosecution of Roger Stone. When you look at the kind of lying with real national import that happened here with the Pfizer warrants and all of these unprosecuted lies that went on by the FBI. Even you look at Sally Yates was setting up Michael Flynn with the, quote, Logan Act, which we know was a pure fantasy. So there's so much here that is really, we have not seen accountability yet. This is really the last hope for accountability.
You're right.
It doesn't look good with the pass on McCabe, but let's wait and see. Real accountability has not come despite these reports that show obvious wrongdoing.
And he's talking about the Durham investigation, of course, when he's talking about real accountability. With respect to what Mark Penn has to say, again, former pollster for Clinton World, he's right. And the Logan Act as a way to entrap Flynn. This is also why I think President Trump tweeted at Chris Murphy, the senator, mm-hmm. for meeting with the Iranian foreign minister. Looks like a violation of the Logan Act. That's the standard, right, for prosecution? Continuing to make this case that there seems to be one set of laws for Trump administration officials and the rest of America and another set of laws for leftist elites in positions of authority in law enforcement agencies, intel agencies, Congress, inside the anybody who holds a position of authority sway inside the Beltway and is a leftist, is part of the resistance. And he has a point. So I'm with Mark Penn. We'll wait and see what happens with the Durham investigation, what that produces. But that is the last chance for a real reckoning before November. Chadwick Moore is a former editor-at-large of Out Magazine and The Advocate, contributor to Playboy, New York Post, and columnist for Spectator USA, joins us now. Chadwick, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good morning.
How did you interpret the timing of the decisions that the president announced yesterday regarding those pardons and commutations?
Yeah, you know, it does seem like it may be timed for Roger Stone, who's being sentenced tomorrow. Also, perhaps with General Flynn, it does certainly seem like that may be the case. You know, the president is not a man to back down from his words or make empty promises often. And the fact that he started tweeting recently about the egregious potential number of years that Roger Stone may get, he's not going to, if he does nothing, if there's a very severe punishment for Stone, and the president doesn't do anything about it, then that's not really the man that we know. So he seems to have been setting this up for a bit. I guess we'll see. People have been, wondering for a while if he did plan to do anything. Sometimes people say that the president, one of his faults I've heard people say is that he demands absolute loyalty from people around him, but sometimes doesn't then show that loyalty in return. Roger Stone being a prime example of that. However, it does seem time that he's planning to do something.
Well, are you surprised? I mean, the timing, obviously, yes. Tomorrow, Roger Stone is being sentenced, but I thought he'd wait until after he won the election. Did you?
Right. Well, that's the sticky situation. And if the president was talking about this, if he did wait until after the election, then that wouldn't look really good either, especially for his political enemies. They would say that, you know, he was just putting it off until after the election because he knew there was something wrong. If he does go ahead and do this before the election, you know, maybe he'll just speak to, his conviction that Roger Stone did nothing wrong. And, just looking at that case, I mean, let's not forget that pre-dawn raid on Stone's house. Like he was
a drug cartel leader. Right. As if he had weapons in his house or committed a violent crime. I mean, these are white collar crimes.
Exactly. And it's a process crime. And I mean, should it really be illegal to lie to Congress? I mean, look, they lie to us every day. Just also don't forget that they were in bed with CNN on that. They had CNN embedded to get the whole thing on tape, which is just further speaks to the corruption between the Democrat Party, the Washington elites, and the media.
Chadwick, you write that in Spectator USA, that President Bernie Sanders, that is not something that should strike fear in our hearts, that prospect. But Tony Fabrizio, the pollster for the president, echoed what President Trump said last week, that all things being equal, rather face Bloomberg than Bernie, that Bernie, you know, on paper could potentially present a challenge because he has the same thing that Trump has, a motivated, energized base.
Right. He's the only candidate that does have enthusiasm behind him. However, who knows if you'd want to face off with the president keeps standing up for Bernie, you know, and saying that the DNC is playing to steal the nomination from him once again. So that's interesting. But there's always been that, not with all of Bernie's supporters, but, you know, some of them, there's always been a kind of sympathy with the Trump supporters in that they're united in this kind of anti-establishment mentality. And they're also just their absolute hatred for the corruption of the DNC. So in 2016, the two candidates didn't really attack each other that much. They're still very much aligned on trade, which is important. As I was writing that, you know, Bernie, he's one of the most ineffective members of the Senate and also of his time in Congress. He's not a leader. He's a pontificator, you know, sort of like Obama, except I think that Sanders is more ideologically motivated. He's been in Congress since 1991. He has passed seven laws that had his name on it, and they were from things like, you know, renaming post office and then declaring a holiday in Vermont. So he's got these huge grand ideas. He is consistently ranked in the Senate as the most far left ideologically and also towards the very bottom of his leadership abilities. I mean, he's not a guy that gets things done, and he's also not a guy with much skin in any fight, as we saw in 2016 when he rolled over and let the Democrats treat him so poorly.
Yeah, what do you expect from tonight with him and Michael Bloomberg, who's got his ticket to Vegas?
Well, that should be interesting. It's interesting to see how, for some reason, how the media has leapt into Bloomberg's pockets, or maybe the other way around. Bloomberg's not even on the ballot in Vegas, I believe. And yet,
no, he's not.
I saw someone today say there are 8 op-eds in the New York Times today about Michael Bloomberg, and he's not even on the ballot. Meanwhile, you know, none on Mayor Pete, who is currently leading in confirmed delegates. So tonight's debate should be interesting. I mean, Mike Bloomberg had a bad week in terms of optics, and yet the media is still kind of jumping in on board with him.
I wanted to get your reaction to this piece in the New York Speaking of the New York Times by Brett Stevens talking about whisper networks and the Trump whisper network particularly. He writes that speech is free except where and when it isn't. And when speech isn't, when you have a censorious culture like we increasingly have, people are less likely to share. But it doesn't mean their silence is assent. One recent academic study, he notes, noted that so-called secret voters supported, you know, people who didn't make their choice clear, supported Trump over Hillary by a 2-to-1 margin in 2016. Stevens writes, that statistic should be every bit as alarming to Democrats this time around, not least because it suggests polls may be dramatically underweighting the scale of Trump's support. He suggests that that Whisper Network probably made the difference in the states that made the difference. And he suggests that it has only grown as the censorious quality of our culture has grown in opposition to Trump at all costs over the last 3 years. Is that your sense of it as well from within the circles you travel?
Oh, completely. I mean, the number of secret Trump supporters and secret Trump whisperers that I encounter just, you know, in any given week, even here in far left New York City, is astounding. And the fact that the left are the perpetrators of all this censorship culture, the ones that have truly struck fear into the hearts of people that who might, you know, otherwise be speaking their minds and come out in support of the president because they don't want to get their lives ruined. Who could have predicted that it could actually hurt them, because they really don't know how to appeal to their voters. They don't know what people are thinking, what's on their minds. And so maybe we're left with just this crazy rhetoric that we've been hearing for months in their debates, this sort of off the rails, far lefty stuff about, you know, anything you want, climate change or gender or what have you. They've created this culture where people won't help them be a better party.
And what is the state of play, to the extent there is a discernible one, with the whole, you know, Blexit, blacks leaving the Democratic Party, what's the gay version of that called, Glexit or something? The gays leaving the Democrat Party. Yeah, what's the sense? Is that a real movement? Is that part of a whisper network? Is that something that's material that's happening?
Here's what I just sort of gather more on the ground. Oh, I think, first of all, gay men absolutely are fleeing the Democrat Party. I do think we'll have record black and gay votes for Trump and Hispanic votes in 2020. I don't really think that it's, I sort of get like, I don't, but I think that the sort of Blexit movement and all that, it's not really speaking to, it's not, the message isn't getting where it needs to go. It's not getting to, and the people that actually would benefit from Republican policies the most in our inner cities, which have just been decimated by Democrat policies for decades. But, you know, if I talk to people, I live in a very mixed income neighborhood. There's housing projects across the street. I talk to people who live there in my local bodega and stuff. And it's increasingly rare for me to find a urban black person who's like super triggered by Trump. They'll be like, I hate the way he talks, but he's doing a pretty good job. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that the kind of Brexit movement, I think that most of the audience, I don't really think it's really reaching where it needs to reach, but I do think that there's a sense among these traditional voting blocks that the Democrats are kind of crazy and that Trump isn't that bad. In fact, he's doing pretty good. I don't think a lot of people really buy into this, you know, he's a racist, white nationalist, something, as much as the party might like.
Chadwick,
I think if anything,
What does the gay community think of Mayor Pete Buttigieg?
Oh, well, nobody likes him. No, the gays do not like him. Mayor Pete's fans are not gay men, and that is almost across the board, especially the really, really far left gays. I mean, they're all in for Bernie. They're more into socialism. Mm-hmm. A lot of people look at Mayor Pete and, you know, the far lefties don't really like how he tries to come off as very traditional, that he's Christian, that he's, you know, came out very late in life. He's not very culturally gay, you know. So there's not really much of a connection there. They really, really don't like him. He doesn't have any gay fans.
Now,
interesting.
Now, with Rosario Dawson coming out as a lesbian, now what if he picked her to be his running mate? Would that help?
Well, that might help. He's definitely going to need a person of color. They're all going to need a person of color as a running mate. But poor Cory Booker.
I know. What are we going to do, Chadwick?
Brokenhearted.
Are we going to send him an edible fruit arrangement or flowers? What do you think?
We should, because it was just such a fairy tale love story.
Yeah, there's no question.
Just see the love between those two?
There's no question. It is
such bad acting, really.
And you hate it, too, when somebody opens themselves up the way that Cory Booker did, only to... It's sad.
Valentine's Day, too.
I know. Well,
really
timing's
turning the knife, yeah. Look for Cory Booker on Dr. Phil's couch at a forthcoming episode. Chadwick Moore, former editor-at-large of Out Magazine, The Advocate, contributor to Playboy, New York Post, and columnist for Spectator USA. Chadwick, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Always a pleasure. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Well, former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich was all smiles walking through the Denver airport yesterday after learning that President Trump had commuted the rest of his 14-year prison sentence, making his way back to Chicago. And
caught an 8:30 flight out of Denver.
WGN reporter Julie Unruh missed him terribly, it sounded like. They had a chat while he was walking to his gate.
I want to express my most profound and everlasting gratitude to President Trump. He didn't have to do this. He's a Republican president. I was a Democratic governor. My fellow Democrats have not been very kind to him. They've been, in fact, they've been very unkind to him. And what he did was, I think, something that deserves a great amount of appreciation on my part personally. And he has, from me, my deepest, most profound and everlasting gratitude. And I can't wait to get home. I miss my daughters, miss my wife. I miss home. He's got obviously a big fan in me. And if you're asking me what my party affiliation is, I'm a Trumpocrat.
Yeah.
It's a broken criminal justice system, and it's an unfair criminal justice system. It's a criminal justice system with too many people who have too much power, who don't have any accountability, and they could railroad people and put innocent people in prison, and they are, generally speaking, virtually always prone to over-sentence people. It's a criminal justice system that's not only broken, but it's also racist. And I saw how it affects people of color and how on cases with nonviolent first offender drug offenders that they're made to do decades of prison time for things, for mistakes that they made and wrongs they committed that any fair-minded society would not allow. And
Rob,
so I'll have more to say later.
You said things happened for a reason. Do you believe this happened for a reason?
Yes, I do.
How so?
I just believe that sometimes out of evil, good things can happen. And I think that the wickedness and evil that was done to me and to my family can be turned to good.
And he has a positive attitude. He said he spent a lot of time alone with God in the last 8 years. But there was no contrition. No, I'm sorry for what I did.
Well, no. Evil was done to me and my family. There was only 2 years ago, Wall Street Journal op-ed, I'm in prison for practicing politics. So at least we didn't have to suffer the non-apology from the political hack, which we're so used to in this city. He protests his innocence. I don't agree with him, but that's the position he's taken from the outset and continues to take. I just wonder, very concerned about the inmates in his Shakespeare class. I just want to make sure they get credit for this semester, because I know they hadn't gotten to the sonnets yet. So I want to make sure.
He's going to be missed in prison, trust me.
Well, you can take that a lot of ways.
Well, no, I meant intellectually.
For more on Rod's release, we're pleased to be joined again by Rob Blagojevich, Rod's brother, and author of the book Fundraiser A, My Fight for Freedom and Justice. Fundraiser A, My Fight for Freedom and Justice. Rob, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Well, good morning to both of you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we appreciate it. And I know we've talked about this before, but it recedes into people's memory. You were indicted with your brother initially, hung jury. He was retried. Federal government decided not to attempt to retry you. And I think a lot of people had, including in a media that is not as sympathetic to your brother, which would include me, very sympathetic to you and do believe that you were used as a way to try and leverage your brother in a way that was illegitimate. You should have never been prosecuted. It's one thing to pressure. It's another thing to actually go forward and indict and inflict the kind of cost that was imposed on you by the U.S. Attorney's Office. I always thought that was wrong. But I think your brother deserved to go to prison. And then we get into the business of what the duration of his sentence should have been. Where are you on that? Was Rod innocent and in prison for practicing politics, or is this a matter of arguing about an appropriate sentence?
Well, I would say that your observations are insightful about what happened with me. And I would say that the government has, as we all know, unlimited power, and they use it only as severely or generously as the individual agendas of those U.S. attorneys, in this case, Patrick Fitzgerald. So they were merciless and, to me, did not represent the best of this this country by going after me and wanting me to plea deal to do something against my brother. And then, as you mentioned, they dropped the charges after Rod and I were on trial. The reason they dropped the charges is because I was an effective witness for myself and my brother. And the jury came back hung. And the day of the hearing, to set the date for the next trial, my lawyer gets a call from the lead prosecutor saying that, look, we want to cut a deal with your client. We won't prosecute him we won't try him with his brother again. We'll consider something for him, but he's got to wait until after his brother has been tried again. And we said no to that. And the next day they dropped their charges on me. So they play chicken with people's lives. And as Rod said in that clip, and he's right about this, there's no accountability back to these people. These are government righteous driven people who have no accountability, and that's a real problem. So I would say this. I'm very grateful to President Trump for what he's done for Rod and his family. And, Rod definitely has a lot of work to do to get back with his girls and make up for 8 years.
And do you think your brother is a man without a party now? I mean, what do you think his political leanings are going to be?
Yeah, good question. I can't speak to that. As you may or may not know, I haven't spoken with Rod since right after he was convicted. We had been estranged for reasons that had to do with how we were preparing to go to trial that first time. And we were very unaligned in what was important and what mattered in preparation for trial. And so that created a real issue for us. And there are personal issues between the two of us. But I love my brother. Mm-hmm. I want nothing but the best for him and his family. And so whatever his political affiliation might be, that should be the least of his concerns or anyone's concerns. He needs to kind of rebuild his life and rebuild his relationship with his family. That's first and foremost. And I hope he does that.
Do you think that whether you want to characterize what he did during his tenure as criminal or just errors in judgment, do you think he is self-accountable for the decisions that he made as governor?
He's accountable for his actions. There's no question about that. And I would say that anytime the government, as they did with us, wiretap you for 50 days and compile hours and hours of undisciplined conversations like we all have all the time, they can make a federal case out of it, which is what they did with Rod. I'm not going to comment on his guilt or innocence. He's paid a big price. Mm-hmm. So in my view, this is over. He needs to go rebuild his life. But the lessons that I know he learned, and I know I learned, and I thank you for mentioning my book, because I wrote about that as mm-hmm. a first person sitting in this courtroom the size of a basketball court, overwhelmed by the resources of the federal government in a David and Goliath battle that you only have a 4% chance of walking away with your freedom. I got lucky. I had the resources, I was innocent, and oftentimes that's not enough. And so with regard to my brother, guilty or innocent, he's paid a big price. Whether he admits anything or not, you know, obviously that's his choice. He's going to have to reflect on that and live with it. But he needs to get on with his life and rebuild his family life, most importantly.
Is there anybody in this saga that wasn't held accountable, other than, in your opinion, the federal prosecutors, but I'm talking about in terms of politicians or political operatives, anybody that wasn't held accountable that should have been by law enforcement?
Man, that's a wide open question. And the first name that comes to my mind is a name that you may or may not remember, John Wyma, who worked for Rod for many years. He was with Chuck Schumer when Schumer was in Congress, came over to work with Rod when Rod was in Congress. He was being followed and was going to be charged by Patrick Fitzgerald, a U.S. attorney, for things that he was doing on the side that were allegedly illegal. And so he copped a plea and he pled against his friend to get off and to take care of himself, which is what the system is built to do. And as Alan Dershowitz has said, the government gets people to compose, which means they get them to say things that sound right and twist the facts to get an outcome that they seek. And so Wyma was very expedient, took care of himself, didn't care about anyone else, and he's been a free man. I would say, though, in terms of in general, and this is, you know, this is kind of the DNA of politicians. Rod, when he was arrested, and he and I were talking quite often and trying to support each other at that time, the astonishing thing to me was nobody in his party there ever reached out to him. It was the rats were jumping off the ship, making sure they've got their stuff and, you know, covering their backs so they don't get swept up in the storm.
Well, that's what happened.
To me is a real lesson.
About J.B. Pritzker? I mean, we talked yesterday about J.B. Pritzker. He was seeking to have Barack Obama's U.S. Senate seat, and he didn't support
that guy. That guy is he's a low character guy who's from a wealthy family and has a lot of money, and he was able to, you know, get elected. He was wiretapped with Rod, asking Rod for the Senate seat. And, you know, that was, I know, played during his election for governor. But what people don't know is he was supporting Rod when Rod first ran for Congress and won in the 90s. And I happened to be at the celebration that night. I came up to support my brother, and I met JB, and Rod said, this guy's rich and he wants to get into politics. And, you know, he's kind of becoming my friend. And so then you fast forward, he gets elected. And now he's saying that Rod hasn't been punished enough. I mean, my God, where's the mercy? Where's the decency? Shame on J.B. Pritzker and all the others in that Democratic Party and the Republican Party. Because it's not about what's right and wrong. If you think Rod's guilty, fine. But 8 years for taking no money or hurting no one is penalty enough, really over penalty, for what he allegedly had done. And there's no humanity from these people. All they care about is raising money, enriching themselves, and selling pablum, whether it's a Democratic pablum or a Republican pablum, to the public to raise money and contain their power.
Well,
that's a really sad thing.
Yeah, and I mean, and you probably learned this from your short time in Illinois politics, that this is how crime families work. You see it on the silver screen, and that's what we have here. Both parties operate as crime families. So I know it was a crash course, but yeah, those on the ground have observed this for some time. It's just that voters seem to like this for some reason here. But you mentioned J.B. Pritzker. What about some of the others that were involved in the discussions about the Senate seat? The Rahm Emanuels of the world and anybody potentially from the Obama White House, a lot of interest in the 302s, the FBI fact sheets with respect to some of these other well-known names in Chicago politics that seem to have skated on everything related to Rod Blagojevich.
Well, you throw, for sure, Rahm Emanuel, the tiered justice system. I mean, the guy is a protected elite who has friends in the DOJ, of course, a connection with the Clintons. And there's no way a guy like that is going to be blemished or put in harm's way. And I remember reading his 302, getting ready for trial, and reading along very avidly about the chain of questioning. And then when it came to Rod and reaching out to Rod and asking Rod to save his seat, because he was going to go work for Obama for a while, if I remember correctly, and so that Rod could reappoint him. And Rod told him, no, I can't do that because I don't think I have that power. And then when it started, when the prosecutor started asking, or the FBI agent started asking Emanuel about specific things related to Rod, they took a break. The tape was stopped, the recording was stopped, and they resumed and followed a completely different line of questioning, which, as I was getting ready for trial, I had to worry about myself, but I read that because I thought I needed to be aware of it. But now I can talk about it. And you can also throw in there Jesse Jackson Jr., who sent emissaries to me, which I wrote about in my book, one offering $1.5 million, the other offering $6 million if Rod would appoint Jackson to the Senate seat. Now, I know the Reverend and his son, Jr., came out in support of Rod some months ago. That's very nice. And I know Jesse Jr. went to prison for stealing campaign funds, but he's never been held accountable for wanting to buy the Senate seat. Yeah. And I even went to Washington and spoke to the House Ethics Committee when he was in, when he was still in office. And I told them everything I could remember from the 302s that I read, which were fairly detailed. And nothing ever happened to him with regard to what he tried to do, buy a Senate seat, which, just for your listeners, everything I'm reading here is saying that Rod was convicted of trying to sell Barack Obama's Senate seat. All those charges were dropped on appeal because he was not trying to sell a Senate seat. People came to me trying to buy it, but we said no. And that's a narrative that's just gotten twisted over the years. And I'm really grateful to you, the both of you, for giving me a chance to speak about that a little bit. So those are the two people that I say skated big time with regard to our legal ordeal.
Now, Rod, once the dust settles, do you hope to make amends with your brother sometime soon?
You know, I haven't spoken to him for, I don't know, 8 years, some 8 years. I reached out to him, called him, estranged from his family. It's a sad thing. We went through a very stressful time, yeah. Different philosophies on how to deal with the biggest problem of our lives. As I've said numerous times, I love my brother. I want nothing best for him. And if we can be reunited as brothers somehow, that'd be great. But right now, he's got to focus on his family and rebuild those relationships.
How would you characterize you mentioned sort of the part of the narratives in the media. How would you characterize the Chicago Press Corps' coverage of this saga over the last, decade?
You know, great question. First, I'll say extremely sympathetic for me once I testified. And you have no idea what kind of feedback I got from some of the crusty people who've been covering the Dirksen Federal Building for their entire careers. That was very uplifting, and I felt good going into the verdict after the jury rested. I felt very confident. Unfortunately, it was hung. But with regard to Rod, you know, that's inside baseball. That's big boy politics. However they treated Rod, they probably had every right to do. He's a public person. But I will say this. Over the years, even when I went up for Rod's resentencing some years ago, when Judge Zagel was still on the bench, I sat in the courtroom, and all the local press that covered our case were sitting behind me. And once the judge reinstituted the 14-year sentence, both in the courtroom and on the way down in the elevator, to a person and a woman said, "This is wrong. It's just too harsh. He's been punished enough." So, you know, I got to say that overall there was responsibility in how they reported things, and also a compassion and humanity that they realized that Rod may have been overpunished by the system. And therefore, again, I say I'm very grateful to the president for seeing that and doing the right, compassionate, humane thing for my brother and his family.
I just want to go back to your brother and sort of his circle of influence and the people that were around him during his time in power. I mean, you had Chris Kelly. People forget some of these names. You mentioned John Wyma. Chris Kelly was a friend and fundraiser, also indicted during that period, committed suicide. The Tony Rescos of the world. Rod chose to surround himself with some questionable individuals, and I wonder if there has been, in your conversation with your brother over the years before you were estranged, some recriminations about the judgment calls that he made in politics in Illinois.
Well, I remember a conversation Rod and I had well before anything happened to us. Chris Kelly was just indicted for income tax evasion. He had sheltered income through his business and ultimately was discovered and charged and told Rod, who passed on to me, again, this is second, third hand, that he did that. He was wrong. He was going to man up and face the punishment. And then he was indicted two other times, all the while trying to get him to flip on Rod, which he refused to do. And ultimately, after having three federal indictments on him, he committed suicide because it was too much. So I would say my brother's judgment in people and who to trust is abysmal. And he listened to the wrong people. He did not take my opinion. did not take advice from people who had no agenda other than to serve him as the governor of the state. And so, and to me, that's the biggest reflective lesson learned that I can offer. He just surrounded himself with yes men who just didn't challenge him.
He is Rob Blagojevich, brother of former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich, released yesterday per the president's commutation. Also, check out his book if you want to sort of reflect back on the decade that was in Illinois politics now that Rod has been released. Fundraiser A is the book, My Fight for Freedom and Justice. Rob, thank you for joining us. Appreciate your generosity with your time.
Well, thank you both for the invitation. Have a good day.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
It's time for your daily edition of
the Public Sector Pensionaire of the Day.
Yeah, Public Sector Pensioner Millionaire of the Day in Illinois.
Ooh.
We have more than 17,000 to choose from, but I've got a list of 17,000 here.
Yeah, like a Lakeview phone book over there.
We'll go through. You tell me on what page to stop.
Stop.
Okay, and then how many lines to go down?
Five.
Five lines. All right.
It's simple.
See. One, two, three, four, five.
And what do we have?
I'd like to introduce you to Paul Manson, Oak Lawn Hometown School District 123. He retired at the age of 55.
Wow. Must be nice. Mm-hmm.
He put 100, his current annual pension is $126,000.
What?
How much did he contribute to his pension?
That was my next question.
Mm-hmm. He contributed during his employment $127,000. His annual pension is $126,000. He contributed during his entire work history to earn this pension $127,000.
Wow.
His total pension paid to date is $2.06 million. His total present value pension, his expected lifetime payout is just north of $3 million. He contributed 4.2% of the value of his pension to that pension.
Who came up with this system?
127 in, 125 a year currently, $2 million out so far,
and 3 point.
And he's got at least another million to go.
What? Let's just call it. Is he married? The sugar daddy segment, huh? Who knew?
Congratulations, Illinois. That's our public sector pension millionaire of the day, which is a perfect segue to our friend, also an Illinois native, New Trier grad, U of I grad, Steve Moore, economist, Wall Street Journal columnist, author of Trumponomics. Steve, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hi, guys. Hey, I want to be a pension millionaire.
Who doesn't?
So do I.
Yeah. You don't have the right friends, Steve. That's the problem. You don't have the right friends in Chicago.
I'm just everybody around the country. I want you to know, because you're there sheltered in Chicago, we are all just proclaiming odes of joy that Rod Blagojevich is.
Well
See,
said.
Don't pronounce his name either, nor could Trump.
Blagojevich. Okay.
Just go there with Blago. Keep it simple.
Yeah.
Go with Blago.
Everybody just says
Blago. By the way, I don't even remember why he went to jail. I was some kind of. Or,
it was the quote-unquote sale of Obama's Senate seat, as well as shakedowns of children's hospitals and that sort of thing. Yeah,
I was asked by a reporter, you know, what I thought about this, and I said, well, you know, like, if they're going to put the people who are guilty of fraud and corruption in Illinois in jail, that every politician in the state would be in jail.
And that'd be a good start.
That'd be a good start.
Yeah, I know that's the great Rod Blagojevich third graders defense of everybody's doing it.
But let me say this, if I may, because I feel very strongly about this. Michael Knowles was a genius. He was a genius who created modern financial markets in the United States. He made hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people millionaires the right way, not through government pensions. What he did was he raided companies with management that was self-serving, that was paying themselves millions and millions of dollars but wasn't providing products. And what Milken would do was come in and buy those companies, get rid of the corrupt management, and rebuild those companies into, you know, stellar firms. And the reason he went to jail is because, guess what? The corrupt management didn't like that very much. And he should be regarded as a hero. And I am so proud of Donald Trump for finally, after, what, 30 years, you know, giving him, well, I guess, is it, because he already served his time.
Yeah, so it's a pardon,
but,
right.
Clemency. But, yeah. But Michael Milken should go down in the history books as one of the great financial minds of our modern times.
No, I agree with that. We talked a little bit earlier in the show where there was a good chapter actually on the Michael Milken prosecution in Harry Silverglate's bestseller, Three Felonies a Day,
yep.
How Most Americans Get
yep.
Three Felonies a Day, about just how malicious that prosecution was. And, of course, the great irony, who was the prosecutor in New York that put Michael Milken in jail?
Rudy Giuliani.
And Giuliani.
But Rudy was
a proponent of the pardon, yes.
Yeah, he was. So anyway, that was I thought it was a really upstanding thing for Trump to do. It should have happened a long time ago. And it's important that we get the history of this stuff right, though, because, you know, Milken, what you had was these entrenched managements of these companies that were self-serving, paying themselves millions of dollars, running the companies into the ground. And Milken would go in, he'd buy the companies with junk bonds, and then he would rebuild the companies and provide real wealth. And that's how he got his sin was getting rich, because back then, you know, you weren't allowed to get rich in the United States because you were evil if you got rich. And that ethic is back now with the Democratic Party. Anyone who gets rich is evil, except Michael Bloomberg, who wants to spend $5 billion on the Democratic Party. So they will. Now they like billionaires again.
All right. So 7 pardons, 4 commutations, this happening the day before, 2 days before the sentencing of Roger Stone. What message is this sending?
Roger Stone is a political prisoner. It was one of the most outrageous convictions and one of the most outrageous sentences in modern times. The left is using the prosecutorial system to put political prisoners in jail. Roger Stone, I'm not a huge fan of Roger Stone's. I worked with him a little bit on the campaign. But the idea that you come in, you know, he was the one, for people should remember, that they bought, you know, squadrons of people to raid his home. I think they had 25 more people, you know, raided his home than, you know, raided Bin Laden to get him with machine guns and artillery.
Armored tankers. You know,
he was in his pajamas. And I think Roger Stone is not, by the way, his sentence, I think he was sentenced to 9 years in jail.
Recommendation.
Child molesters don't get those kinds of sentences. I mean, it's he is guilty of working for Donald Trump. That was his crime.
I wanted to, since you're close to Trump, I want to talk about some matters of economic policy.
Okay.
And specifically...
Oh, I know what you're going to say, Dan. I know what you're going to say. You're going to say Barack Obama deserves all the credit for the good economy, right?
No, I'm not going to say that.
Oh, yeah, there's the big debate. Is it,
This is not a show for grade schoolers, so we don't even have to deal with those sorts of ridiculous assertions. But I wanted to talk about higher education. Because, as Andrew Sullivan said, and I often quote him, we're all on one big college campus now. That's how influential what's happening on college campuses is. And the argument that in perhaps not now can't upset all of the alumni from all of these hallowed institutions, but in a second presidential term, Trump gets the federal government out of the college loan business, returns it to private banks, and defunds much of the research, taxpayer-funded research, the taxpayer funds used to finance dubious research at so many of these institutions.
Yes.
He redlines that in a second term.
Yes. Yeah, and this is should be the highest priority. We've been talking about corruption for the last 15 minutes, and there are no more corrupt institutions in America that are charging our kids $50,000, $60,000, sometimes $70,000. Yes, I'm talking about UNorthwestern, for kids to go to these schools. The average tenured professor is teaching 4 hours a week. They're graduating kids with, you know, $150,000 or more of debt. It's just the most outrageous racket that's going on in higher ed. And by the way, these universities, there are now over 20 universities, including Harvard, you know, Harvard, Stanford, Princeton, Northwestern, that wouldn't have to charge tuition ever for any student coming into the university by just using their massive multi-billion dollar tax-free endowment.
Yeah.
And why don't they use that money to lower the cost rather than go to the government to subsidize these things? So I think Trump is right on in this and taking on the university powers. And every university in America is charging half the tuition that they do today.
Well, right. And what about the, I mean, Yale's endowment, Harvard's endowment, north of $30 billion.
They're financial institutions.
I know. They're financial, right? Exactly. They're financial institutions that operate as political operations, and that's the problem. They're not institutions of intellectual pursuit anymore, by and large. And so, yeah. What about holding them to account, including with tax policy?
Yes, and the tax policy. Think about this, ladies and gentlemen. Liberals love to, go after rich people. Why is it that these endowments over $10 billion? Are tax free. We should start. You guys have known me a long time. I am against taxes. I'm about as anti-tax as anybody you've ever have on your show. But you know what? I'm in favor of taxing these massive endowments that just sit there. Basically, the Goldman Sachs. They're not an educational institution.
He is Stephen Moore, economist, Wall Street Journal columnist, and author of Trumponomics, Inside the America First Plan to Revive Our Economy. I just wanted to leave you with one big idea to take back to the White House and demand that it be included on January 20th of 2021. First order of business. Steve Moore, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Have a great week.
Take care.
Thanks. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
It's time for Animal Stories with Uncle Dan and Little Amy.
Dan and Amy, yeah, Animal Stories. Lundy, an 8-week-old chihuahua, and Herman is a pigeon. Lundy can't walk, and Herman can't fly.
Oh, I saw this.
And
want to snuggle.
They're roommates at the Mia Foundation, and it also sort of sets up like a Richard Pryor, Gene Wilder movie.
Yeah.
Did you ever see No Evil, Hear No Evil?
Yeah.
You know, Richard Pryor was blind, and Gene Wilder was deaf. That's sort of Lundy and Herman.
They don't make movies like that anymore, Dan.
No, because both Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder are dead.
Okay, all right, too soon.
Much like Lundy and Herman would be without perhaps the Mia Foundation, this nonprofit that helps animals with special needs and birth defects. They've already raised more than $6,000 in donations to the foundation after the picture of Lundy the Chihuahua and Herman the Pigeon went viral.
Well, I don't know if you've seen this video that's also going viral. An Australian man was having a mug of beer. Or a pint of beer, and he looked down, and there was a little Geico in his beer. So he scooped the lid, and he was lifeless.
Geico is an insurance company.
A gecko.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gecko.
Uh-huh.
Little lizard was inside.
It'd be impressive if an insurance company was in his beer.
Scooped it out, and then he noticed it wasn't breathing, so he did chest compressions. So you can see the video. He's pressing his little chest very gingerly.
We're losing him!
and they were losing him. So then he took his mouth and put it over the little
come on, breathe, God bless it, breathe
real lightly, and he came back to life. Now we don't know if the lizard was playing dead as a defense mechanism, but they think that because this a little beer came out of his mouth, he was trying to get his drink on, and he drowned in his beer,
and now the gentleman who saved his life has the coronavirus.
Why'd you go and do that?
All right, one more. A horse is a horse, of course, and no one can talk to a horse, of course, that is, of course, unless the horse is the famous Mr. Fred. Mr. Fred, the mini service horse. Yeah. This is right up your wheelhouse here.
Yes, I have a service animal.
Mr. Fred, the mini service horse, just made his first plane trip with Ronica Froese.
Yeah.
That's his handler. She's trained him to be a therapy and service horse. He's out of Western Michigan. Hale's out of Western Michigan. Oh. Housebroken, frankly, more well-trained than most dogs. She purchased 2 first-class seats in bulkhead seating, saying, "I paid an arm and a leg for tickets, but I did so because it was Fred's first time and I wanted to be comfortable. I wanted to have him to have the most room."
Oh, that's sweet. And you know what? That's nice to your fellow passengers.
So put your seatbelt on, Fred, and the tray table up.
Did she,
She added...
do you have a picture over there? I want to see it.
She added, though, about people who abuse the service animal
program. Emotional support program.
It is out of control. It's a very abused process, and there are a lot of untrained service animals on the plane that are not trained, like Amy Jacobson and her bulldog.
No.
That's what Froese said.
But no, she did not say that, because Bunky is extremely well-trained. We paid for training for her. So then, so she can walk through TSA, she sits. Then she walks through the metal detector, sits on the plane. She's never, ever had an accident. We've had some long flights. Is very friendly to everyone. Sits down at my feet, lays down. And if there's turbulence, she'll jump on my lap before it begins, as if she knows that something's going to happen.
All right. That's those sixth senses come from generations of inbreeding, a monstrosity that is the English bulldog.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Three 1 2 6 4 2 5 6 0 0 turnkey.pro answer line 6 4 6 3 6 DA turnkey.pro text line. Should President Trump cool off his tweeting and keep his attorney general? He addressed that before boarding Air Force One yesterday, expressing absolute confidence in Attorney General Barr.
Confidence in your attorney general?
First, I have total confidence in my attorney general.
Do you agree with his statement that you should stop tweeting about Justice Department
issues? Well, people like that, but, you know, everybody has the right to speak their mind, and I use social media. I guess I use it well, because here I am. I'm here. And I probably wouldn't have gotten here without social media, because I certainly don't get fair press. So I wouldn't have gotten here without social media, and perhaps with all of the hoaxes, you had the impeachment hoax, you had the Mueller hoax, you had the Russia nonsense, all scams. And if I didn't have social media, I probably wouldn't be here.
And maybe that's so, but are you making it more difficult, if not impossible, for Barr to do his job, as he so indicated?
Your comments on Twitter are making it impossible to do his
job.
Are you making his job impossible?
Yeah, I do make his job harder. I do agree with that. I think that's true. He's a very straight shooter. We have a great attorney general, and he's working very hard. And he's working against a lot of people that don't want to see good things happen, in my opinion. That's my opinion, not his opinion. That's my opinion. You'll have to ask what his opinion is. The attorney general is a man with incredible integrity.
Well, enjoy that moment of self-awareness from President Trump. I mean, that was great. He's like, yeah, I am making his job harder.
Yeah, I think, you know, from the outset, I've suggested that, look, you have two strong personalities in a pressure cooker, and mostly they're aligned and their agendas are aligned, but you're going to have moments where he has considerations that Barr doesn't have, and Barr has considerations that the president doesn't have, and so there's a disagreement. I mean, that happens with heavyweights in every important organization. So I think it's just being whipped up into hysteria, including with the AP suggesting that people close to Barr, unnamed people, as always, are saying he's considering resigning if Trump doesn't stop tweeting on pending DOJ matters. And that was rejected by the Department of Justice this morning, saying that Barr has no plans to go anywhere. It's important that President Trump keep Barr. I think there's been I saw a lot of reactions from conservatives, Trump supporters, who suggested that, oh, you know, Barr is some sort of swamp hack because he was critical of Trump's tweeting on the topic of Stone's sentencing recommendation, as well as McCabe, the investigation into McCabe. I understand Barr's perspective. I think Trump is right that he has every right to comment on DOJ matters, and Barr is right that he has every right to assert his independence at justice when it comes to pursuing these investigations and prosecuting them, or if they so choose, to the best of their ability. So I just don't buy into sort of the false binary and the the frenzy the D.C. press corps is trying to impose on this relationship. I mean, I'm not here to chastise Barr, and I'm certainly not here to chastise the president, other than to say, thinking about what is in your strategic best interest, clearly the president's tweeting about McCabe's case was not helpful. And some restraint is probably judicious, even though it's not required. You have the ability to do something. It doesn't mean you should always exercise your right to do it. You know what I mean? And with respect to Barr, it's good, I think, to push back and provide a public acknowledgement of the separation here and the independence of the Department of Justice, so that despite the protestations of the Beltway Press Corps, people understand that there is a separation here and they can have confidence in the decision making that's going on at Justice, including with respect to whatever comes out of the Durham investigation. And that's really important. The Durham investigation, the work product of that, needs to be seen as legitimate in terms of whatever it produces and whatever basis it provides for whatever action.
Well, then why is CNN they came out with this breaking news last night at about 8:20 and then again this morning hammering home that inside source say Barr is considering resigning over President Trump's interference with Justice Department matters.
I'm sorry, why is CNN doing that? Yeah, is that a rhetorical question?
No, I mean, it's just because it's not the Department of Justice come out and said that's not true. So they're just trying to stir the pot, right?
Well, this is CNN. Pardon my James Earl Jones. Well, it's always unnamed sources. It's everything is breaking news. Everything is DEFCON 5. I mean, how do you watch CNN and confer any credibility onto their reporting? I honestly don't know how you do it.
Well, you have to look for second sources, and then most of the time what they have on the news is a bunch of bull jive.
No, you don't have to look for second sources. You have to ignore what CNN is doing and saying because
I like figuring out what the left is trying to do.
Well, fine, but you have to discard them as a serious news outlet and the people on CNN as serious news people, because they're not. I mean, they've just demonstrated that. I don't know how you don't acknowledge someone's behavior over they do this over and over again. We have myriad documented cases of their
fake news
manufacturing news that isn't true, making baseless allegations that they present as news. Again, it's always end of the world level importance.
It's Mach 5.
So, I mean, how do you look at that and say, oh, this is something I should consider? So you look at it in a proper context. Oh, this is the comm product of the Democrat-led resistance today. That's what it is. They're a comm shop for the resistance. And so is MSNBC. And so are so many other Beltway outlets.
Yeah, they all have a political agenda. 312-642-5600 is our turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Monty in Chesterton, Indiana. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
How you guys doing this morning?
Good.
Good. Hey, I just wonder how much of this is a disinformation campaign put out by Barr and Trump, so that when Barr announces he needs a press conference to announce something, the press will rush out thinking it's his announcement to resign, when it's actually announcements to indict Comey and folks.
Thanks for the call, Marty. I don't think so. I mean, I get what you're saying. Trump said there was no communication directly with Barr about the Roger Stone matter. I think it's it strikes me as a genuine disagreement. And I don't think Barr would play those sorts of games. Now, I mean, somebody who impersonated their own PR guy, John Barron, may want to play those kind of games, but I don't think he does so anymore. I don't think he would try that with Barr. I don't think Barr would participate in that. So I think it's genuine. And as I said, it's fine. You know, genuine disagreement, because interests are not always perfectly aligned. And President Trump does have a point, although that doesn't provide him blanket immunity on judgment calls, but he does have a point that without social media, would he be standing there today? Would he have been elected? Would he have survived all of the runs that the left has made on him? That's a fair point that he raises. Dave in Ravenswood.
Yes, well, to your point about how just terrible the media is and CNN, I think about this Washington, D.C. stripper that's got the paternity case with Hunter Biden. We know surprisingly little about her, but if parties were reversed and the Bidens were Republican and Trump Democrat, I bet Hollywood would be test piloting a screenplay on her story, giving her a $60 million book deal, and she'd be on every talk show. So to me, it just screams volumes, that case alone.
That's an interesting point. Hey, Dave, are you preparing the ticker tape for the arrival of Blagojevich in Ravenswood today?
You know, my wife's remote today, so I was teasing her. You should get out and take a walk and see if you can eyeball some of the activity. But unfortunately, I'll be at my office, so no.
Oh, that's too bad.
And he's already home. They're just coming out and having a celebration. Maybe some confetti will be thrown.
Yeah, well, so a street fest.
Yeah, and Ziff made the sign, "Thank you, President Trump," that hangs on their banner outside. There's some love balloons.
Are they going to get like a bouncy house or anything for the kids and barbecue?
You know what? What about a karaoke machine? And he could sing Elvis like he did in prison.
It'd be wonderful. Invite Tiny Dancer and Amy Rule over.
Yeah,
they're in the neighborhood.
You know what? They're right down the street.
Yeah.
And then Blago will start running again because that's what he does. He runs through the neighborhoods and talks to people. And that's what we're going to be looking forward to. It's going to be a little bit of a circus.
It's great. It's going to be like we never left 2007, 2008. No, I want to go back.
We're picking up exactly where we left off 8 years ago because I was there when he left and said goodbye to the world. Now there when he comes home.
And the only thing that's changed in Chicago over the last decade is your property tax bills have increased and the quality of services have decreased and there are fewer neighbors when you look to your left and your right. That's about it. It's not that much. He'll be able to reintegrate into Ravenswood straight away, I'm sure. Sean in Elmwood Park.
You know, Prof, I will not have you besmirch John Barron, the public relation genius. So I'd like you to recant just a little bit.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, it's genius what he's doing. I mean that. It is truly genius. The push and pull of a political party. You know, I'm in Florida and I got all the news this morning and late last night. As you sit back and you look at everything and you listen to Republicans chant all of the things that are going on, and I don't just mean policies, but these last two, both the Blagojevich and the Stockholm syndrome we have for the corrupt Democrat mafia and their victims. Just listen to Rob, the Corsican brother of political scumbags that they are, and now they're victims, and everyone feels good. It's so nice what he did. And Mike Milliken, he's a genius. He's not a junk bond scumbag that was attached to everything from Whitewater to scamming old people out of their savings. He's a financial mastermind. Not guilty of 6 fraud counts. No. He didn't plead guilty. He didn't get a $1 billion fine. Because what's happened is through this push and pull manipulation, the Republicans are the 98 Democrats. Now, granted, the Democrats are the Sandinistas. I get it. But don't come on and pretend that the Democrats are victims and that Milliken's a genius and that populism is capitalism. But through the magic of social media and intimidation, here we are.
Okay, there's a lot to unpack there, Sean. Most of what you said is, the sort of ravings we've come to expect and enjoy from you. First of all, his name is Milken, not Milliken. Milliken is a university in Decatur. Yes. Mike Milken is a financial genius, high-yield corporate bond. It's just interesting to listen to him. And Rob Blagojevich with a B is not the same as Rod Blagojevich with a D. They're not the same people. And you have to make independent judgments of the two. And, well, let's see.
Yeah, because clearly Rob is the brains of the family.
And it's just interesting to me, rather than make assessments on specific cases and, use evidence and logic, the same entities that you spin conspiracy theories about, prosecutorial arms of and law enforcement agencies, now you're providing a knee-jerk defense to when it comes to their prosecutions of Milken in particular. Some would argue Blagojevich, but Milken in particular, and I would argue on Blagojevich, not Rod with a D, but Rob with a B, yes. So, boy, I don't know. I mean, I think Sean is sort of the negative composite of CNN. It's always sort of blaring chyrons with very little underneath them. And both entities, Sean from Wood Park and CNN, sort of suffer from the same problem, just coming from different directions. And you know what? That problem becomes awful tiresome to listen to.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Famous conservative quotes presented by Automated Systems.
The late, great Winston Churchill said, "You will never reach your destination if you stop and throw stones at every dog that barks." Pretty wise words considering all of the distractions in modern society.
Manufacturing companies, I encourage you to call my friend Laz Kulchar from Automated Systems. Automated Systems is a software and systems integration company that specializes in companies that are required to meet FDA compliance requirements. Automated Systems will create a custom solution for your business that will make your production lines, facilities, and plants run more efficiently. Imagine less downtime, more speed, and fewer rejects. From Fortune 500 to startup, ASI delivers solutions for your toughest automation challenges. For information, I encourage you to talk to Laz at Automated Systems. Call 844-HIRE-ASI or visit hireasi.com. That's 844-HIRE-ASI, 844-HIRE-ASI, or online at hireasi.com.
Feel better and look better with the Vein Center of Orland Park. Whether you're seeking treatment for varicose veins, spider veins, or facial spider veins, Dr. Kiefner at the Vein Center of Orland Park is the vein specialist to see. The Vein Center of Orland Park is a specialty vein center offering the latest in vein treatments for your vein problems. It's Dr. Kiefner's private medical practice with over 30 years diagnosing and treating vein-related disorders for men and women. Dr. Kiefner is one of the most experienced vein specialists in the United States. Schedule an appointment today and see for yourself at veincop.com or call 708-460-8800. That's 708-460-8800.
This is Dr. Kiefner. With our experience treating vein disorders, I'm confident we can help you. Visit us at veincop.com, veincop.com, or call 708-460-8800. I look forward to seeing you.
Folks, when shopping for a home mortgage, how much is great service, low closing costs, and competitive interest rates worth to you? At Townstone Financial, it's priceless. Hi, Barry Sterner, founder of Townstone Financial. Let's hear about the Townstone experience from one of our customers.
My name is Melissa, and I bought my first home with Townstone Financial. The owners of the house I bought wanted to close in a very short amount of time. I believe it was 3 weeks. And I was fortunate to have Barry at Townstone did everything for me. And Barry at Townstone explained everything to me, did everything, and then would show me the papers, and I signed them. And that was that. It was the easiest part about closing on the house for me.
Remember, nobody values your home mortgage business more than Townstone. I guarantee it, and I own the company. So call me now, Barry Sterner, at 312-896-2110. That's 312-896-2110. Or go to townstone.com. That's TOWNSTONE.com.
Townstone Financial is licensed in Indiana, Michigan, Wisconsin, Florida. NMLS 136639. www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org. Equal housing.
Balance of Nature's fruit and veggie capsules contain 100% fine-ripened fruits and vegetables, tested pure, with no pesticides, fillers, or additives of any kind, and are the most effective whole food supplements on the market today. Fruits and vegetables are on an average 85% water. Balance of Nature uses cold vacuum technology to remove the water, leaving only the whole food. Our cold vacuum technology maintains 99% of the fresh fruits and vegetables' original nutritional value. Don't wait to see what getting over 10 servings of whole fruits and vegetables every day can do for you. Right now, Balance of Nature is offering free shipping and 35% off on any new preferred order of fruits and veggies. Start your journey to better health today by calling 1-800-246-8751 or by going to balanceofnature.com and make sure to receive this special radio offer by using discount code Chicago.
AM 560, The Answer.
This is 60 Seconds of Sanity with Dan Proft. The timer starts now.
The 1619 Project doesn't seem to believe in America or black people. So said Brown University economics professor Glenn Lowry. The 1619 Project doesn't want you to believe in them either. The 1619 Project aims to redefine America's founding date and its founding values. The 1619 Project presents a stilted view of American history. It tells of slavery, almost exclusively, but not the Civil War. It covers the Tuskegee experiment, but not the Tuskegee Airmen. Theirs is a demonstrably false story of America as the forever oppressor and black Americans as the forever victims who lack the agency to change their circumstances, much less their country. But the battle has now been joined. A group of leading black intellectuals, social service providers, and clergy, led by civil rights movement veteran Bob Woodson, launched 1776 Unites as a direct response to 1619's divisiveness and for the purpose of offering a complete accounting of America's history, one that includes the stories of black Americans' resilience and achievement. They do this to correct the historical record, as Bob Woodson said, in the spirit of 1776, the date of America's true founding. And you can get more information about the 1776 at 1776unites.com. I encourage you to read the scholarship from the academics that are part of this effort, because then you'll understand when the New York Times runs stories like, black families came to Chicago by the thousands. Why are they leaving? Question mark. Talk about the Fox Butterfield effect. Black families came to Chicago by the thousands. Great migration. Why are they leaving? More than 200,000 black families have moved out of Chicago in the past two decades. Yeah. And the New York Times says it's racism in Chicago.
I don't mean to interrupt your 60 seconds of sanity. But
well, we're beyond 60 now, but I mean, this is it. I mean, this is, no matter what it is, that's their go-to. It's the legacy of slavery. Is that what's happening in Chicago? Have they talked to any black families who've left? Is that what they're saying? Of course not.
It's too much effort, Dan.
It's violence. It's lack of economic opportunity. It's lack of educational opportunity. It's all those, you know, quality of life issues that transcend race. But the New York Times, the backer of the 1619 Project, has a narrative, and they are going to hew to that narrative because it is the source of their relevance and political power. And if you're not promoting victimology, then you are in danger of losing your core constituency. And that's what the 1619 Project, which more like 1619 propaganda, is really about. And this is why you get absurd stories wondering, trying to crack the code. Why would people be fleeing Chicago and Illinois? For the same reason that so many white and every other pigment of person is fleeing the state. It's quality of life at price point. That's the top line.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So Rod Blagojevich, sentenced commuted by the president, has returned to his home in Ravenswood for the domestic bliss he used to enjoy.
Well, you know, they had moments, he and Patty, that's for sure.
Why are you talking so weird? What's you're not right. What's the deal? Are you not?
Let me close my door.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah. Go ahead, what?
I think Jerry Roper was in here today.
Yeah.
He speaks well of you, but of course he would to me.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm going to hang up on you. What are you doing? What is it?
Well, what? I'm asking, what do you want me to say? You got to see what they say to you at one. I tried to be helpful, and he jumped down my throat.
Okay, fine. Okay, yeah.
I have nothing to say to you. I got nothing else to say about it. You tell me I don't know anything, so I'm sitting here, I'm listening. Tell me.
That's good. All right, that's it. Be normal. I don't like you talking in some weird way. I don't know who the you are when you're doing that.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, whispering. What is this bull?
That's your new WLS morning drive team. Blago and Patty in the mornings. Yeah, you get that fired up over there by March 1st, I suspect. For more on the commutation as well as the case, which you know, still being litigated in the public,
really,
not just the sentencing, but who was and wasn't caught up in the prosecution of Rod Blagojevich. We're pleased to be joined by Patrick Murphy, who was an FBI special agent, part of the Blagojevich investigation. Patrick Murphy, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hi, Dan. Hi, Amy.
Hello.
Thanks for having me.
What did you think of the president's decision? Had Blagojevich served enough time in your estimation?
You know, I thought Judge Ziegler's sentence was more than appropriate, if I recall right. If you actually followed the judicial guidelines, he was facing more than twice that. Mm-hmm. And I think in the context of some of the other sentences, I still think it was fair. That being said, I really didn't have a strong feeling about if, in fact, the decision was based purely on the belief that he had done enough time, but if it was at all based on some suggestion that the investigation and prosecution was anything but done fairly and properly, then I'd strongly disagree with that.
Now, when he got out of prison, he was still defiant, no contrition, no apologizing. Do you think Blagojevich has learned his lesson?
No.
No.
Other than maybe just being more careful.
Well, so his argument is that he was in prison for politics, the way politics is practiced, certainly in Chicago and Illinois, on a daily basis by all sorts of people in public office. Respond to that. How is what he did different? How would you react to that contention?
Well, the cynical perspective is maybe there is a lot of that going on, and he's just one of the ones that happened to get caught. That being said, I've dealt with a lot of public officials, and I'd say the majority, if not the vast majority, know where to draw the line. He had no sense of where that line was and just blew right past it. So, no, he went above and beyond the norm.
Take us back
of what's done here.
Yeah, take us back to that day that he was arrested. Why did you move in when you did?
There are a number of factors. One was that there were a lot of things that were going on that he was still doing corruptly as the governor, and so we felt we needed to act soon, much sooner than later. Add to that the fact that the Tribune had actually published a story 2 days before leaking the fact that we were recording Governor Blagojevich, so we were pretty much forced to have to go over it with the investigation. And the thought was arresting him was the appropriate way to go over the investigation.
We talked to Rod's brother, Rob Blagojevich, and he said that different representatives of Jesse Jackson had run at him with cash and prizes if Jesse Jr. was appointed to that Senate seat. $1.5 million, $6 million were the numbers that he threw out. So if Rob Blagojevich had that information, and you, according to this account from 2018 in Chicago Magazine, had incriminating conversations, quote unquote, then why not get buyer and seller? Why just seller?
Well, I'm familiar with what you're talking about. And ultimately, it comes down to the weight of evidence. You know, there are a lot of, as Rob Grant, I listed in one of his interviews on other stations earlier, there was a lot of accusations, a lot of evidence of other acts that weren't charged. And it wasn't necessarily that they didn't happen, but it was just not enough evidence that we felt was needed to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt.
So you never had there's been competing narratives about why the FBI moved in when it did. He was going to appoint himself to the Senate seat. The Tribune was publishing these stories. He was about to consummate the deal. It just seems strange to me. I don't really feel like I've ever gotten a satisfactory, complete answer from the government about the timing of this when you're up on surveillance and you have buyer and seller. So the sale was ostensibly in process for some time. Certainly the conversations that have leaked look like he would provide evidence that he was shopping it. So how is it that it couldn't be put together to get seller and buyer again? I just am not clear on this.
Well, the timing of there was negotiations in process at that time, but as you may recall, the Chicago Tribune published the story, I think it was the morning of December 7th or something like that. And at that point, Ron Blagojevich was basically in cleanup mode and in reversal mode, trying to cover his tracks and was canceling meetings and things like that. So at that point, there was nothing else to be gained by having the wiretap up because he was aware that his conversations were being recorded.
So at that point, there was no evidence that you had, not compelling evidence or evidence that you could have pulled together through witness testimony, statements adverse to interest from witnesses like Rob and Rod, for that matter, that would have identified criminal acts, criminal intent by a buyer for that sentence. Nobody.
I'm not saying there wasn't evidence, but I'm just saying that in the whole, and this is more the decision of prosecutors than me as an investigator.
Right.
But frankly, I totally agree with what they thought, is that we just didn't have enough evidence on certain transactions to basically prove beyond reasonable doubt that it was a criminal action.
What was he about to appoint the Senate seat to himself?
That he talked about, I honestly don't know what was inside his head, but that was certainly something he talked about multiple times.
On the tapes?
Yeah.
And what about the tapes that, you know, Blagojevich's perennial lament was release the tapes, release the tapes, release the tapes, all the tapes. And so what about any suggestion? And I mean, again, we don't know. So this is, it's an easy thing to say, to suggest something nefarious or something incriminating about somebody else. But what about that? What about, is there, are there conversations on tapes that have not been made public that would be relevant to understanding what was happening and perhaps provide more basis for understanding the choices that were made by federal law enforcement?
No, I don't believe so. I truly don't believe so. And ultimately, that call was made by Judge Sable, who I have a lot of respect for. So he applied the laws he sought, and I think it was correctly so, to determine what recordings were relevant and what weren't. The one analogy I've heard in the past, I think Judge Sable used something similar, is charged him with bank robbery. You don't have to show that he entered the bank 20 other times and did not rob the bank. It's just the fact that he robbed the bank that one of the 20 times that's relevant.
Right. And that's fair. But there's also the argument that there were people who were protected. Now, again, this is a theory, but I want to get your reaction to it to respond to what, you know, people are saying. The idea that there were other people, to continue the bank robbery analogy, there were other people that were involved in conversations about the bank robbery that were not charged, that we've never heard about their role in the planning of this. And the names like Rahm Emanuel and Valerie Jarrett and Jesse Jackson Jr., whose name has been mentioned, but they come into this. And so people say, again, they were engaged in conversations with Blagojevich about a quid pro quo for a Senate seat at some level, and yet they walk away from this without incident.
Well, in any investigation, you have a lot of different people that might, in one aspect or another, get involved in the criminal activity, maybe tangentially or even more so. But ultimately, you can only present in court what's relevant and what the government believes is sufficient to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the activity occurred. And it's not the job of the government to reveal every aspect of the investigation. There's certainly avenues like FOIA to try to access that type of information. But as far as the criminal process, we're actually not allowed to disclose information that, frankly, isn't being brought before the court.
Right. Only Jim Comey can do that. That's an aside. I strike that remark.
Yeah, okay,
I'm objecting to myself. but with respect to those conversations, what about the assertion that the 302s of interviews with subjects, that's something that should be disclosed as well. Is there any information you think would be germane from the 302s?
Well, I wrote a lot of those 302s, so I'm not sure. Are you talking about the FOIA process? I mean, at this point, I imagine that there are a lot of FOIAs being filed
right.
to obtain those types of reports. And I'm not aware. I'm assuming that at some point those 302s can be released, but I don't pretend to be an expert on that.
Yeah, I mean, from your perspective, I know it's not your call, but from your perspective, there's no reason that the public shouldn't be able to see those 302s at this juncture.
Again, I'm really not comfortable commenting on FOIA law and what the Privacy Act allows for.
Okay. But I mean, if it doesn't run afoul of the FOIA law, I mean, just sort of personally from a normative perspective, not a legal perspective, if there's no problem with the law, there's no problem with FBI protocol, there's no reason the public shouldn't see those 302s.
Yeah, I agree with that statement.
Okay.
Okay.
And what about Rob Blagojevich? Rob with a B, not with a D. What did his brother do? Why was it appropriate to arrest him and to prosecute him?
Well, we didn't arrest him, but he was prosecuted because he was directly involved in some of the corrupt transactions that his brother, the governor, was involved in. So at that point, Robert was the head of his campaign, and as such was very involved in some of the quid pro quo type transactions that were going on. Ultimately, the jury hung him, particularly with regard to Robert. He certainly wasn't acquitted by the jury, but ultimately the government decided to just focus on the governor for the retrial.
Right. But are you suggesting that Rob, though, that was a legitimate indictment for somebody who was materially participating in a criminal conspiracy of shaking down children's hospitals and selling a Senate seat?
Yeah, I believe the government was correct when we charged him the first time. I felt that there was some strong evidence against him.
What's the strongest evidence? What is the strongest evidence you think you had against Robert Blagojevich?
Yeah, I have to go back and pull the tapes, but there are conversations between Rob and Robert, and where clearly Robert knew what his brother was doing, and in some ways was facilitating some of that. But it's been so long, I couldn't specifically cite exact conversations, but I remember the time thinking that we had a pretty strong case against him.
Hmm. I mean, you know, again, we're holding you to remember these details from a decade ago, so I understand. But I'm a little bit more than a layman, but as sort of a layman, at least with respect to this case, it just strikes me as odd. And by the way, I'm not a supporter of the commutation of Blago. I'm a supporter of the prison sentence that was handed down. It doesn't bother me at all. So this is not being an apologist for Blago. But with respect to Rob, the way that you characterize that, you know, so he's materially involved in these conversations, and that's what implicates him. And Jesse Jackson Jr., through emissaries, is materially involved on the buy side, but that doesn't implicate him. Can you see how people would be confused about those distinctions?
Well, I point to the weight of the evidence. Frankly, there was no recorded conversation of Congressman Jackson.
Was there an effort to get a warrant to surveil him?
Yeah, I can't comment on that. I believe that's not something that's out there in public domain, so I can't talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
But keep in mind that the investigation was cut short because of the Tribune story. We were still chasing down avenues of corrupt activity. But once that story hit, we had to pull the plug, because at that point, Rob Blagojevich was totally in, I'll call it, cleanup mode.
At the point the Tribune stories were breaking, how long had the investigation been ongoing?
Well, the investigation started out with a shakedown in Naperville at Edward Hospital back in late 2003, early 2004. but it just kind of progressed from there. I mean, Robbie Blairwich was not a main target at that point.
But you were recording him and his associates for 6 weeks prior to the arrest?
Yeah, it sounds right. It sounds right. October, mid-October, I think it was, or late October through December 8th.
So the investigation, though, going back to the Edward Hospital, the investigation had been ongoing for the better part of 4 years.
Right.
Okay. Patrick Murphy, his former FBI agent who was on the Blagojevich case.
And arrested him that morning.
And and it's recounted. I'll tweet this out. It's a good piece in Chicago Magazine, chicagomag.com, about he and his colleague in that day, which he provides some of the details that, you know, they're hard to recall if you don't have, I guess, the photographic memory of a Rod Blagojevich, allegedly. Patrick Murphy, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And it's a fascinating article because when they came to pick him up, he said, "Are you joking?" And then later, right before they took him out, he asked, "How does my hair look?" It's a great article. Patrick Murphy joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.